Okay, let's convene the meeting. Looks like we got a quorum. I'm sorry that room is smaller. I didn't know it was this popular. But we'll start with Representative Norton, House File 2027. Okay, before we do that, we need to approve the minutes. Hamilton, I thought
Hamilton. So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hamilton moved the minutes. All those in favor of moving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Minutes adopted. Why don't we go ahead with the would you like to move your own bill?
I'd like to
House File 2027. For possible inclusion. Representative Norton moves the bill 2027 for possible inclusion in the Amateur Licensing Bill. Go ahead.
I'm going to have some experts speak to the bill. Specifically, this is a bill to allow physical benefits assistance to have licensure in the state of
Minnesota. Right before you guys go, I know that we have a very contentious bill at the bottom. And it comes to my attention that these four bills at the beginning are not controversial. So 10 minutes or less, even better. You can do five.
I can do five.
Okay, go ahead.
And I would like to move an author's amendment.
Representative Norton has an author's amendment coming around. And why don't we vote on the author's amendment, put in the shape that the author wants, and then we can start the testimony. Is any... Everybody got the amendment?
Yep.
Okay. Representative Norton moves the A070276. Hold on. There we go. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment adopted. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Lunning. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Physical Therapy, and this is an agency bill we're bringing to you for licensure of physical therapist assistants. There are some green folders here, so maybe when you submit those will get passed around, and there are a few technical changes in this bill to the Physical Therapy Practice Act. I do want to emphasize from the very beginning and throughout that there is no change in this bill to the PT scope of practice. There's no change in supervision or delegation to physical therapist assistants. There's no change in the educational requirements for the physical therapist assistant. What this bill does is licenses the physical therapist assistants. In addition, this bill increases the membership of the board from 9 members to 11 members. We'll go from 4 physical therapists on our board to 5, from 1 physical therapist assistant to 2, and remain with 1 physician on the board and 3 public members. There is a grandparenting provision in this bill that will not exclude any current Minnesota physical therapist assistant. There is a requirement in the bill for physical therapist assistants who will be graduating next year, and for physical therapist assistants moving to Minnesota after next year to take and pass the licensing exam. It adds grounds for discipline for physical therapist assistants. There currently aren't any, and it will require the physical therapist assistants to have the same amount of continuing education as physical therapists have, 20 hours every 2 years, and require the physical therapist assistants to have the same number of practice hours. Physical therapists are required to have 320 hours of practice in any 5-year period in order to renew their license, and we would be applying that to physical therapist assistants as well. The fees in this bill are at level exactly equal to the physical therapist fee, $60 a year for annual license. Those are at a level that has remained unchanged since 1994, and we will be able to cover all costs of administering this at that fee level. We have moved, it's a lengthy bill because we moved a lot of language from rule into statute. The reason for that being things like application for a physical therapist, we didn't want that to be in rule and have the application for the PT assistant to be in statute. So we consolidated, reorganized, but very little has changed. There are a few technical corrections, some updating of language in those movements, like the accrediting agency for physical therapists and physical therapist assistant education is defined at the current level. The language in our current practice act uses some things like the Canadian Medical Association, who hasn't accredited physical therapist education since the 50s, so there's some language that really did need some updating. One point is Minnesota is one state, and there are five others that do not currently license or regulate their PT assistants, and that's on a handout for you. Colorado, Hawaii, Michigan, Utah, and Washington are the only other states that do not regulate their PT assistants. And then I just want to close with, why do we need this? It's about public protection. Currently, an individual who fails the National PT Assistant Licensing Exam can't work in 45 other jurisdictions, but they can come to Minnesota and work. A PT assistant who has lost their license, had their license revoked in another state, can come to Minnesota and work. And we won't even know it because we don't even keep track of them. And then the other thing that has happened to us in Minnesota is when a physical therapist assistant does something wrong, we can't discipline them. The only folks we can discipline are the physical therapists. And so if the physical therapist assistant has done something beyond what the physical therapist has delegated to them, there's nobody being held accountable. So I would ask for any questions and ask for your support.
Any questions, Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, I guess, is a simple one. Those issues that you just brought up, will this legislation correct those specific issues?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, they will, because physical therapist assistants will be licensed, so we'll actually know who they are. And the current physical therapist assistants who come in under the grandfathering clause will not have to take the exam. But after that, everybody will. But that's no different than it is right now. They're practicing without taking the exam. And then in terms of discipline, they have the very similar grounds for discipline as the physical therapists have.
Thank you.
Anyone from the audience want to testify against this bill? They see none. Thank you for coming. I think the next bill we have is my own bill. Okay. 705.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 705, I believe.
1705.
What is it?
1705
for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Without further ado, I'll have the we have an amendment.
And
I'd like to move that amendment first, and then we'll describe what's going on.
You passed out.
Yeah, I move Amendment A1 to amend the author's amendment to House File 1705. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Why don't we move it into the bill and then we'll explain the whole bill.
Okay.
we need.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. All those opposed? This is my first time. Me now to the chair position. All those opposed? Amendment has come back.
Okay. Thank you. I won't attempt to explain the bill. Why don't I have the testifier do it?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I will attempt to explain it as well. My name is Julie Johnson. I'm a pharmacist and the current executive director for the Minnesota Pharmacists Association. The bill before you has is a technical corrections bill on behalf of the Board of Pharmacy, who actually drafted the language. We're presenting it on their behalf. It actually has two components that I'm going to simplify for myself and hopefully for you. Currently, Minnesota statute uses the phrase personally handwritten, in handwriting, dispensed as written, or DAW. This is an older statute back when we didn't have electronic transmission of claims, and it is used when a prescriber wants to indicate a specific brand of a drug. When the federal law brought us the Medicare Modernization Act that created Medicare Part D, these prescriptions are allowed to have an electronic DAW. So this creates a dilemma in the workplace that we can do transmit this DAW for one population one way, another population the other way, and it's causing a lot of confusion. And we would like the statute to allow electronically transmitted dispense as written. The second part of the bill has to do with the request of the Board of Pharmacy to be allowed to statutory authority to register individuals working as pharmacy technicians. The law currently allows the board to register them, but it's silent on the actual power to promulgate rules that may decide things like education and certification and things like that. So the law is silent on it, and the Board of Pharmacy would like specific instructions or allowances to promulgate those rules. I did pass out this sheet in case I've left out anything about those two items, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. I will say that the amendment has to do with the first section, the dispenses written. The amendment just puts a security action in place, if you will, so that a prescriber can't just write dispenses written on every single prescription. It just maintains the current procedure where a physician decides whether he wants a specific brand or not. So a blanket, you know, sort of DAW would cause more problems. So the amendment actually makes a lot of sense, and we would support that as well.
Any questions from members?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tao, throughout the bill cites Code of Federal Regulations, Title 42, Section 423. Can you tell me what that is? I'm just kidding, Representative.
I was prepared. Well, thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one quick one, Madam Chair. So, Representative Tao, the pharmacists, can they keep this electronic copy or prescription on file, or do they have to keep that on file for a period of time, or do they need to make paper copies, or how does that work?
Representative, I knew you'd start asking me more questions about Board of Pharmacy rules, and I'd be in trouble, but I can tell you that the requirements for safekeeping and storage of electronic prescriptions is the same as they would be for the written. They have to be kept for X period of time. So
all right. Thank you.
Thank you. So we will hold this over for consideration on this. Sorry, I missed you. Representative Murphy.
No.
Oh, no? Okay. Thank you very much. No, I have 5 bills up today. Oh, I didn't know how to do this one,
too. Okay,
are you just going to call Frank?
Okay. Up next, Representative Abler moves File XXX, we don't have
the possible cruising. Those other motions that sound the same, Mr. Chair.
Do you want to do the 0651 one?
This is that one.
Doesn't matter which one you're doing first, Bill.
Okay. Let's just, for the sake of order, move the 0651, which is introduced. It just didn't get, it was a holiday, I think. Let's talk about this.
Okay. The social work. No? Okay. Representative Abler moves House File 0651 for possible inclusion.
So, Mr. Chair, I had no idea the interest in this bill tonight. The social work world has got many advocates. I'm so pleased to hear the multi-disciplines here supporting social workers, you know, in a bipartisan, multi-disciplinary way. Just in short, and I think we can summarize pretty briefly what we're doing here. The last session, there was a question about who in the mental health world can get paid for medical assistance, and what do they all do? They had a task force, some of them met 13 times for a couple hours each, which makes our work look pretty mild by comparison. Social workers and the marriage family therapists, I hate to use that word. Anyway, they were here with a psychologist, with a psychiatrist there?
No.
Okay. Anyway, there was another group that came.
Six.
Anyway, everybody who cared about this was there. They talked about where the overlap was. Out of that meeting came the suggestion that two of the groups, the licensed professional counselors and the social workers, modify their law to an extent. These bills, and there's actually one more to come on Wednesday, complete the work that task force set out to do. I believe they're without controversy. There's a small amount of content which we will say in a really fast form for your benefit, Mr. Chair. So I'll turn it over to my witness.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Merriman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. The bill that you have in front of you relates to provisional licenses, and this amends legislation that is currently on the books that relates to individuals who do not pass the examination, the national examination, to become a social worker, but who are also foreign-born and who speak English as a second language. And there is currently an alternative method for such individuals on the books, but that was a temporary measure passed by the legislature, and the legislature required the board to make a report to the legislature and to make recommendations on whether or not that program ought to be continued. It is currently scheduled for expiration August 1st, 2007. And the board reviewed the issue quite thoroughly over a long period of time, received considerable input from community members, from people who are foreign-born and who do speak English as a second language, determined on that basis that there is a need for this kind of an alternative method to continue. But at the same time, the board was concerned about public protection issues that had come up, and it was a matter of trying to find the appropriate balance between allowing access to individuals and making sure that people with culturally diverse backgrounds were able to practice social work, but at the same time to protect the public. And so this bill tries to strike a balance between those two concerns and does authorize the continuation of this program with some modifications. The primary features in this bill are, number one, that an individual must have failed the examination two times before they would be eligible for a provisional license. And secondly, when they obtain a provisional license, they are able to practice social work under the provisional license for up to 3 years. And if they receive a recommendation from their supervisor on the job that they are competent to practice social work safely and competently, they may receive a permanent license without having passed the national examination. So that's the bare bones of their proposal, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
So just to refresh your base memory, this was how many people are licensed, have gotten licensed under this alternative form?
Well, we think about 80 or 85.
Yeah, and so these included Hmongs and some others who were in very area of high need. There's just understand, Mr. Chair and others, that the new addition is they have to flunk the test one more time. They determined that many of them actually pass it the second time. And they can be taken on a very short order. They're offered in town here. And so it isn't like they have to go somewhere. And so I think it's a good makes a permanent resolution to this problem.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Norton.
Chair Tao, Representative Abler. So is the assumption here that the failure to pass the examination is due to the lack of English as a second language as opposed to practical qualifications?
Mr. Chair, Madam, the first part of the legislative requirement was that the board conduct a study to make that determination, and the board did conduct a study. It hired, according to the legislation, an independent researcher who carried out the study, did an extensive research project on that very question, and did conclude that we couldn't conclude definitively because the data was not accurate enough to do so, but based on the information that we were able to gather from the statistical information that he gathered, and in addition to that, the testimony that we received from individuals who have taken the examination is that the failure rate is higher for people who are foreign-born and who speak English as a second language due to cultural language bias in the test.
Can I continue?
Go ahead, Representative.
And I'm looking for, as I heard your testimony, you mentioned that they're under supervision and that part of the licensure approval is with the recommendation of the person that has been doing the supervising.
That's correct.
It's the memory.
And so I'm going to make the assumption then, and tell me if I'm incorrect, that discipline and future license, being able to keep your license, your future licensing requirements would be the same for these newly licensed social workers as for any licensed social worker, despite the language barrier.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton?
I was just, Mr. Chair, same line of questioning that Representative Norton had. So
very good. Anyone in the audience for or against this bill? Okay. Earlier we moved. Actually, we couldn't move it because it's not a bill yet. Yeah. So it's good to have the hearing, and then we'll do what we need to do. The next, got another one, Representative Abler.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and that's the 07-0652, similar motion and hearing, and I appreciate you taking this work on. There's this bill has a little bit more substance relative to continuing social workers, and I won't repeat myself, I'll set my witness to it, but this is a product of that work group. And I don't think all the participants are here, but I want to commend those six groups who took all that time to dissect, to dig into this. Some of the proposals, not your groups, but the counselor's ones, were very controversial. And by working through this process, they are able to come to a resolution.
Okay. Mr. Mearman?
Mr. Chair, members, this bill concerns the status of students attending two new social work, master's level social work programs that are being initiated in the state of Minnesota. One is at the Mankato campus and one is at the St. Cloud campus of Minnesota State University. And the difficulty that we have is that students who enter into those programs do not meet the requirement that's in the statute that students graduate from an accredited institution. But because the programs are just starting, we obviously don't want to exclude those people from the ability to practice social work when they graduate from those schools. So at the request of those schools, what this measure would do is to allow them to practice social work under a temporary license when they've graduated from those schools and have met all other license requirements until such time as a final decision is made about their accreditation of the program. If the program's accredited, then they receive full licensure. If the program is not accredited, then their licenses are taken away.
Mr. Chair, there's an amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment if I can. It's just a technical amendment, Mr. Chair.
Abra moves the A1 amendment.
Since we didn't move this bill at all, do we need to officially move this amendment, or the bill is not on the table? So we got to move this actual bill.
Okay. Okay, let's move the bill. We're not asking. 0652. So,
for possible inclusion, and then let's move the amendment, the A1.
Representative Abler moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, amendment adopted.
That's good of our presentation.
Sounds good. Very good. Thank you for coming. Here's
the micro. It's easy too, Mr. Chair. Thank you, you're done.
Here's the plan. Here's the plan, members. Wednesday we will mark up the delete all to include all the non-controversial bills that we have heard so far. And then this next bill, I'm going to lay out down some ground rules. For Representative Thiessen's bill, is he around? Or? Okay. While they're getting Representative Thiessen, I believe he understands the ground rules already, but here's the ground rule. The proponent gets 20 minutes, and then the opponent gets 20 minutes, and you could divide that how you want. And then after that, we will have the answers and questions. In between, I will allow clarifying questions. Okay? So, only clarifying questions. I don't want to go into the political stuff yet. So, why don't we go... I assume Representative Thiessen is not here yet, so... maybe he wants to start out. I don't know. But did anybody on the committee want to move House File 1189?
So moved.
We'll move the bill for. What are we doing? Are we passing this out? To the Committee of Health Human Service Policy.
Consent calendar.
Probably consent calendar.
So, okay. I guess the opposition can't really come testify yet until they know what's going on, so. All right, we'll take a couple minute break.
Write it out here and then pass it out. Or
I think it's three times, and then on the floor.
Also has bills up in taxes. Well, we may have to go.
I'm not at all. That may not be the rest.
So was your husband happy to see you for the weekend?
He's trying to get caught up from work after 3 days.
We did talk about that. Maybe we could,
What does he do?
I don't know.
I think they did.
That's your third one, right?
Thank you, sir.
That's why you're going to keep saying it.
person to be able to better against healthcare stuff than you did. I said, I think it's so much. Nothing about it going in.
It took me 2 years just to understand the acronym.
I was excited when I got
you know,
things like that.
A little more easy to understand
in
politics.
Right, so there's no acronyms in that.
There is.
There's just a lot of acronyms.
Let's go over.
we tried. Well, they took about two or three of our C-band stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But
that
was the most interesting point.
Really easily.
Absolutely cannot do it. You go away and get that person.
Well, that's the
problem
with the whole deal.
And if you want to hear about it, that says anyone found to be aiding and putting agent in prosecuting us will lose their ability to work. I'm going, do you want them to go to jail?
Never mind, this is what I
eat.
I didn't even think it happened. It happened all around me.
Yeah, I know. Emily, you should know.
There he is.
Thank you. Don't go home and, like, you know, I got to swim in the other. Yeah, I go, where's your office?
600.
I'll go to the sixth floor and everyone will be lazy eyed and eating donuts.
Okay. All right, I want to reconvene the hearing. Representative Thiessen, I think you lost 20 minutes. No, 15, so you got five more. No, Representative Vincent moves House File 1189. Do we want to recommend to pass to your committee Health and Service Policy?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to leave most of the time for the testifiers, as you suggest. But this is the physical therapist access bill. It's really, I think, a bill about ensuring consumer choice, improving the efficiency, I believe, of our healthcare system in one particular way. I think that the evidence that we've learned from other states that have gone to direct access demonstrates that the health care that patients receive is good. We don't see any evidence of adverse health outcomes as a result of moving to direct access. And so I think it's just, I think it's time that we move in this direction. Several other states have done it. We do have some amendments, Mr. Chair, which I think we maybe should do before we have our discussion, if we could do that.
Okay.
Which I don't have to.
Which one you want to move first? I'll move it for you.
The AA1. 1.
Okay. I move amendment.
Well, why don't we move the, actually, Mr. Chair, why don't we move the A4 amendment first?
Yeah, I move file A4 and go ahead and explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the bill, in the bill as it's originally drafted, there was a provision to take out language that required first-year students to, current law says first-year students have to, first-year physical therapists, excuse me, who just graduated can only have to operate under a doctor's orders, basically. This would, and in the bill as it's drafted, it would take out that requirement. This would say that new graduates from physical therapy programs, treating ailments, human ailments without a referral, would either have to be under a doctor's order or could be practicing in collaboration with a more experienced physical therapist. So it would be either or.
Okay. Any discussion? Any questions? Okay. Those in favor of the A4?
Yeah. Some of these, not to slow it down, but I just want to ask a question. I'm trying to figure out, I was a chief author. There's a chief author. There should be a chief authors of this bill club in rehab where we can talk about about how fun this is to be the chief author of this bill. If these, what I'm trying to figure out as I'm talking to people up here is if these amendments all go on, I think there's one other one somewhere, would this represent an agreement where some of the opponents would be comfortable and the advocates would agree that this would be the agreement? And that'd be the end of it. And so that's my question. And so I'm curious on this one. This is a significant improvement to the bill. I think it corrects an oversight or a gap that many are concerned about. And so how do you want to proceed amending it to get it in order? This is the first hearing, and so it's always appropriate for the author to amend the bill how they wish. That'd be my question later. Sure. If these all go on, are people going to still lobby in the hallways, or is this going to be the end of it?
Maybe we should address that just briefly before, because it'll apply to all these amendments.
Go ahead.
And basically, I mean, as to this amendment, I think there is some agreement among at least the people who are concerned about this. But it's not a universal global agreement.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we?
We can get the bill in order.
Why don't we amend this bill to the order of the author what he wanted, and then you could discuss that from that. All those in favor of the A4? Representative Bunn.
It may have to wait to the testifiers, but Representative Thiessen, could you comment just briefly on what we know about in practice currently, how the 1 year functions, just very briefly, in terms of whether much oversight actually occurs or whether sometimes it just means the year occurs and they're now beyond the year? I heard a variety of different stories in the last many weeks about this, and it didn't sound like there was really a tremendous oversight going on with the 1 year currently functioning so far. But can you clarify that just briefly for us?
Mr. Chair, and maybe what I would suggest on that is that we put the amendments on, because I think some of the testifiers will get at that issue.
Let's vote on the amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment adopted. The A4 have been adopted. Representative Thiessen, are there in
the A1 amendment? Why don't we take
that? I move the A1 amendment as well. Let's keep the discussion. Let's hold the discussion until the amendment gets on. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment A1 adopted. Any other amendment?
The A3.
A3.
No
A3.
None of us have an A3.
Why don't we do the A2?
Why don't we take the A2 first? All those in favor of adopting A2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment A2 adopted.
I'll describe the A3, Mr. Chair, while it's being passed out.
What this
amendment does, Mr. Chair, is currently you have to refer back to a doctor after 30 days. A physical therapist has to refer back to a doctor for an initial 30-day period. And in the bill, it was eliminating that requirement. This would put in a 90-day period, and that would sunset that 90-day referral would sunset on August 1st, 2009, which means after August 1st, 2009, unless the legislature acts, there would be no re-referral requirement left. That date corresponds with the end date of the study that we just adopted in one of the other amendments that is going to look at the adverse impact of these, if there is any, of these changes.
So, members, the sunset is not to the 90 days of ending the 90 days, but continuation of the 90 days.
The sunset would, there would be no 90 days after the sunset goes into effect.
Right, right. Okay, Representative,
this is actually, I think you're close to an agreement if you don't have a sunset. That's what I've talked to all the parties.
Representative Abler, maybe
we could divide the amendment or something.
Well, after it's on the bill, we could, someone from the committee could offer an amendment to amend the bill as is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'll just save it the time and all those to divide the amendment.
Oh,
we could do that. And so I would move to divide it on page 3.0 between 3.5 and 3.6, so we can just adopt them in two different groups.
Okay, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll speak to that after you repeat it.
Mr. Chair, can I just suggest something, if you will? I think some of the testimony that's going to become is going to go directly to this issue as to whether we need to do the sunset. So I would prefer to put the amendment on, and if you want to take that provision off after we've heard the testimony, that may be a
matter. Since we're on a roll of putting this, amend this bill the way the author wants, we'll do that, and then anyone from the committee could offer an amendment to take out that section, whatever section they don't like.
Let me offer you a compromise suggestion. I suggest that let's hold off on adopting the last part on top of the testimony. If we could adopt the first part, and otherwise I'll move to divide it. This is the heart of the bill. This is the heart of the controversy. This is where I've been working on this for 2 years. I've spent, I'm not here as an enemy of anybody. I'm just trying to make this deal work. And seldom do we have a situation where the compromise is brought out piecemeal when there's not a global agreement by at least one of the parties who opposes the bill. And that's why, and I know you want to find resolution as well, Mr. Chair. So I think that if the testimony will convince us that the sunset on the implementation is in order, I think that we would agree with that with some unanimity at the end of the time. And if not, I think that we're best off holding on that part. So if that's okay,
I can't stop you. I would prefer we amend it the way. I mean, either way, we're gonna we're gonna get a chance to discuss it and act on it. So, Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with all due respect to Representative Abler, I think that out of respect, since you've carried this bill, I've carried this bill. I know how much work Representative Thiessen has put into this. So, out of respect for him, I think we should let him get it in the shape that he wants to get it into. Let's hear the 40 minutes of debate, and at that time, we'll pick it one line by one line if that's what this committee wants to do. I would advise voting against.
Why don't we go? Why don't Representative Abler? I don't know, it's up to you. You could withdraw that.
Well, I'm trying to be a part of the solutions, Chair. I'll defer.
Okay.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Let's adopt A3, and then I'll give you plenty of time, Representative Abler, to take it out. All in favor of adopting A3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Any more amendments? Okay. I take it someone has the A3, but that's not yours. No, A5. Sorry. Okay. All right. Why don't we start now with the...
You got the timer?
We can use that. Why don't we start now? The Mr. Kester?
Actually, I'm William Cooper.
Oh, Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Cooper, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is William Cooper. I'm honored to be here to speak in favor of House File 1189. I do so tonight as both a licensed independent clinical social worker with 21 years of experience working in mixed medical settings medical and mental health settings, and as well as a layperson who might not be here tonight if we're not for the skills, knowledge, and judgment of a physical therapist. As a professional working collaboratively with physical therapists, I value their commitment to teamwork, their openness to learning from other professions, and thoughtfulness when it comes to patient care. Their involvement with my patients improves their care and saves healthcare dollars. However, while I can elaborate on these points, I'm here tonight to speak primarily in my role as a consumer of physical therapy. Around a year and a half ago, 25 pounds heavier and very much out of shape, stepping to run for a short fly ball during a parent-child baseball game, I fell to the ground with a crippling pain in my left calf. The following day, I saw my doctor, who confirmed I had torn a calf muscle. And at my request, because of my personal experiences, my doctor referred me to a physical therapist. Within a few days, I met Todd Loeffler at Saunders Therapy Centers, who after a thorough examination told me I had torn not one, but two muscles, the gastroc and the soleus. Todd began me to teach exercises for regaining my ability to walk. We started with gently pretending to push a gas pedal and then pulling it back. The next week, he asked me to slowly mimic my natural walk while I was supported by crutches. During chats throughout my therapy about aches that had been bothering me for a long time, he gave me tips for strengthening my throwing shoulder, which I had injured years before while playing racquetball. In the middle of therapy, he suggested exercises for improving balance related to an incompletely healed injury of at least 20 years on my good ankle. Near completion of my rehab, he suggested exercise for my occasional low back pain. Recently, I was surprised to learn that these tips are governed by law. And I was surprised to hear that under current law, without a doctor's referral, he would not be able to check back with me after 30 days to see how I was doing with those recommendations. A couple of weeks into my healing process, I started thinking about the pain I was having in my calf. I started asking coworkers informally in the hallways about how long it would take for the pain in my leg to get better. On Monday, I asked an internist, and he suggested that it can take a while. On Tuesday, I asked one of my coworkers, who's a medical chief. He asked me to walk with my crutches and asked me to put weight on my foot. He became alarmed at how little strength I had in that foot, and he suspected a potentially permanently disabling problem called drop foot. He told me to see a neurologist immediately, and with his help, within a few hours, I saw a neurologist who confirmed Todd's assessment. There were tears in two muscles, and he reassured me that everything was healing just as it should. Relieved at my next appointment with Todd a few days later, I was feeling rather foolish at all the excitement and yet comfortable expressing it to Todd. I described my week to him. Todd, who's usually a pretty affable, happy guy, his tone changed and his affect narrowed. He suggested that instead of PT for the day, that he re-examine me. He took out his tape measure, measured both of my calves, and he said he was concerned about the swelling in my leg not getting better, and as quickly as he would expect. He said he didn't want to do any further PT, and he advised me to speak to my doctor immediately to rule out the possibility of a DVT, which is a deep vein thrombosis, and to rule out a blood clot. Same thing that our vice president recently had. On the phone, the doctor was brief. He said he wanted me to go to the emergency room immediately. At the emergency room, the doctor there, he was very friendly, very happy fellow. He offered me plenty of reassurance that under 30% chance that I would have a DVT because I didn't have redness and I didn't have heat in my calf. He offered me that reassurance and plenty of narcotics to go with the pain. The ultrasound came back and it surprised all of us. It said not only did I have one blood clot, and it was pretty large, but I had another. They were located in the popliteal and femoral veins. I was admitted to the hospital overnight for observation and, like the vice president, to be started on a course of blood thinners. It was the scariest night of my life. I wasn't sure I would see my children again the following day. My son's here, by the way. I'm glad to say that thanks to Todd and the care I received under both the direct access for my shoulder, low back and ankle, as well as under referral from my doctor for my calf, I'm now able to throw a ball longer and harder than I have in years. I have better balance on both of my legs, and except from achings for a few hours from painting too much recently, my back hasn't bothered me in a year and a half. My personal as well as professional experiences tell me I can trust physical therapists. They provide quality care. They know and understand me when we have been working together. They make appropriate recommendations for my care as well as for my patient's care. They think in terms of medical necessity in making their judgments about what services they offer. So they're parsimonious with healthcare dollars. They practice within their guidelines, but they also know when to refer to others. Thank you, and that completes my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Cooper, the proponent of the bill? Yeah, you have 14 minutes. Introduce yourself and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joan Bulmert. I'm a physical therapist, and I'm representing the Physical Therapy Association. I practice in the Medical Public School, and I've practiced for 28 years in the state of Minnesota. And I would like to state that this bill is really about consumers. It's about consumer access, and the heart of the bill is the ability of the consumers to access physical therapy without the arbitrary restrictions that we are attempting to strike within the bill. The legislation that's before you and the sections that are before you for change were implemented back in 1988, almost 20 years ago, as a compromise with the same groups that are before us today because of concerns about patient safety and consumer access to therapists who may not know what they're doing. In 20 years of looking at this aspect of healthcare and patient safety, we have studies that demonstrate that physical therapy is safe. Physical therapists know how to identify, screen patients, and refer them back to physicians or other practitioners when necessary. Our largest liability insurer recently published a study from 1996 to 2000 of claims against physical therapists and found no adverse effects related to manipulation, to autonomous practice, or to direct access. They also do not risk adjust for any states that have direct access versus states that do not have direct access. So they have not found it necessary to adjust claims based on if therapists are seeing patients directly or not. In addition, in a study that was done looking at physical therapist skills in being able to identify red flags or screens for musculoskeletal conditions, new graduate physical therapists did as well as all other physician groups except orthopedic surgeons. Experienced therapists did better than the new, the other physician groups. Our education and training is extensive. The one-year requirement, we are proposed an amendment as a compromise, but there is no study to support the need for that. Representative Bunn asked about patient safety and the requirements for supervision. There is no supervision currently required in the bill. The requirement is for physician referral. So all that is needed to occur is for the therapist to receive a referral. Physicians don't ask and don't know if the therapist they're referring to is a first-year practicing therapist or a 30-year practicing therapist. The other aspects of the bill that we've looked at is the 30-day requirement. The 30 days was arbitrary back in 1998 when it was agreed upon as a compromise. There was no data to support it, but it seems like a reasonable piece to put in because practice at that time was at a method where you would come in for so many times per week and then you would be done. Practice in healthcare has changed significantly. The consumer is in the driver's seat. Health reform is present and consumers want control over their costs as well as their choices. What we know now with how the body heals and how the body works, 30 days is a very short period of time to be looking at a healing process as well as a wellness process of exercise and recovery. So to be in a therapy session and then to have to arbitrarily at 30 days go back to your referrer just because the requirement is there, even though you're getting better, makes no sense. The other aspect of the bill that we are looking at is the changing to requirement of changing protocols, of checking with the physicians for changing protocols. And that was a compromise as a result of discussion with the medical association. When we met with them, they brought their concerns about changing protocols as patient safety related to surgical prototypes. So we tried to address their concerns with the amendment that's proposed before you, related to the need to refer back when prescribed protocols have been offered. The reason that we were looking at originally striking that from that is that was a compromise that was also put in place because of the fear that physical therapists didn't know what they were doing in physical therapy. And that's just not the case. They understand what they're doing, how to examine a patient, evaluate, identify what the needed course of care is, and to progress with that course of care. The other aspect that changed in our bill is that originally we did not have ethics included as part of our rule process, but since that time there has been a component of ethics added to our rules, which also addresses the professional behaviors of the therapist. Our concern with that area of failing to consult is not that we want to not consult with physicians and do not feel that's appropriate. We strongly believe in the team approach of medicine, the team approach of working with individuals. Our concern is that it's under a disciplinary action and at the highest level of prohibitive action, and that it is also in our rules under the areas of ethical integrity, which is a non-disciplinary action, but a regard for professional behavior. In addition, we are the only state in the nation that has that requirement in a physical therapy bill. The other aspect of moving our bill and opening it for consumer access is that we are the only healthcare provider that requires a referral in Minnesota. You may see a psychologist, a social worker, an athletic trainer, an occupational therapist, a speech and language therapist, never needing a referral, never needing a requirement to see a physician. But with this physical therapy, you have a requirement to see a physician. This is a burden for our patients. And our patient that testified last year, in order for him to continue with his therapy, he would have needed to make his appointment with his physician 2 weeks before he identified his problem and went to his therapist, because his physician that he preferred to see had a 6-week waiting time. So he needed to stop his therapy, and there was a delay in care. Another area we have a delay in care is with our families that have come in that are non-English speaking, who do not have physicians, who are not into the healthcare system. As a public school therapist, we see these children come into our school systems. They may have conditions that we know are previously diagnosed, but we have no medical documentation on them. We have no medical situations for them, so we cannot proceed to see them. We are under the 30-day rule, and for them to be able to find a physician, be able to get a referral so they may receive their school therapy services, is a huge burden to them. They don't understand the system, and now we're asking them to access a physician for a service that they don't understand. So in summary of where we are with our bill, we really believe that we are bringing forth a responsible piece of legislation. We believe so strongly in the consumer's need to access and the need for health care reform that we propose the amendments to try and address concerns of our opposition. We really strongly believe, and we have the facts to support it, that therapists are safe and that consumers will be safe in accessing the services. Healthcare reform is not easy, but you need to begin at some place. By removing the arbitrary barriers in our legislation, you will allow consumers to begin to access and make their choice for the service that they wish to provide. You will hear stories from our opponents of the concerns that we will misdiagnose, that we will miss cancer, and that patients will be ill-treated as a result of it. The issue of missing diagnosis is a risk for every provider that sees patients. It's a risk for physicians, it's a risk for chiropractors, it's a risk for social workers, it's a risk for mental health workers. But as educated professionals, we are able to identify the signs that minimize that risk, and as I have stated, our insurers and the State Board of Federation, who oversees disciplinary action, has seen no increase in disciplinary action related to direct access in states that have. So we have the facts. We hope you will listen to that aspect of it, and we hope you will support this opportunity to reform health care by removing the arbitrary barriers. Thank you.
The proponent still has 5 minutes, so you can use it however you want.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members. My name is William Anderson. I am an internist. I've been practicing for 17 years.
Welcome to the committee.
17 years out in Wayzata. And I'm here to support the Consumer Access Physical Therapy Bill. In full disclosure, I should say, I'm married to a physical therapist. And my understanding is the MMA is here to oppose this bill, and I'd like to say that I appreciate all that the MMA has done for my profession. But in this particular case, I'm in support of this bill because I think it's actually in the best interest of my patients. I understand the concerns have been raised about whether this bill will increase number of visits to the therapist, whether it will increase costs, potential risks to their health. And overall, well, I think those are all very important things to consider. I think in reality, those are actually relatively moot points, and I'll tell you why. I happen to know that physical therapists are in Minnesota at the lead of the peer review system. They are very involved with the development and following the guide to physical therapy standards, and these standards set out for a given condition how many treatments it should take to get better. Therefore, the patient is exceeding that, it has that, and that would be triggered to be sent back to a clinician for additional studies. I also know that their standards are geared to recognizing abnormal things, that, such as red flags that you heard about, that should and do result in referrals back. I've seen patients in my practice come back to me in less than 30 days because the therapist already saw that therapy was not progressing correctly, that there were associated symptoms that were out of their scope, or that they needed additional treatment procedures that were not in the scope of physical therapy. Therefore, I know that the guidelines are already there. I know they already work. They're coming back to see me when needed. I've seen also on occasion physicians send out patients for therapy over and over in a plateaued condition, and I've seen the therapist very politely explain that that is outside of their goal to do ongoing therapy for maintenance, to do treatment to progress rehabilitating therapy. The 30-day requirement to see physicians more often than not in my personal practice has been a barrier to care. I usually see patients who have been correctly assessed, they're making appropriate therapy, they're improving only to have to stop that therapy. To get an appointment with me, I happen to have a very busy schedule. It can be a significant delay to get in to see me, only for me to usually say, continue physical therapy, which in turn is probably not your best use of medical dollars and time. I would like to say I think it is reasonable for many of these patients to see their physicians. We bring things to the table that physical therapists cannot. But my personal take is I think this is a huge difference between saying that some should consider and all must come back at 30 days. As far as the first year is concerned, it sounds good on paper for the first year therapist. I think in reality, it doesn't work. I don't know if they're a first year therapist or a third year therapist. I don't see this bill changing my relationship with the therapist. I see we have a great two-way communication, and I urge you to consider.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Anderson. You still got 30 seconds.
I guess there's a handout of additional physician letters. So.
Right. Thank you. This concludes the proponent. K.
Can we have the opponent? And as soon as you get there, we'll start the clock. State your name for the record.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dr. Dan Rotenberg, and I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Ridgeview Medical Center in Waconia, and I also represent the Minnesota Orthopedic Society. I was happy to participate in an early meeting in this session with Representative Thiessen, met with a therapist and discussing the aspects of this bill. Personally, a large part of my practice is focused in sports medicine, and what orthopedic surgery is I treat bone and joint and ligament and tendon problems in young children, weekend warriors, and the grandparents. And in treating these patients, we utilize physical therapists extensively. We rely on their skill and expertise in rehabilitating these patients for whom I've referred. As you've heard, this bill proposes to remove important patient safety mechanisms that are intended to ensure coordination of care between healthcare providers. First, it eliminates that patients obtain a physician referral following the first 30 days of treatments. Second, it scales back the PT training requirement that they practice the first year in coordination with a physician. And finally, the bill removes the requirement that PTs coordinate with a healthcare provider following a referral if the treatment is modified. Unfortunately, we were not able to reach a consensus with the physical therapist for reasonable compromises. They had pointed out that unlike massage therapists and personal trainers, whom they said have unlimited open access, physical therapists provide medical care. That's the big difference. We continue to hear that physical therapists believe they can do more in the area of prevention, wellness, and exercise, and we wholeheartedly agree. But that the 30-day period limits their opportunities. This is one area of compromise where we completely support them, that we agree that this is a valuable role for physical therapists, and we have also offered that the 30-day limitations be removed for these specific services in the area of wellness and healthcare prevention. During our meeting, I believe we found common ground on the requirements for physical therapists in their first year in practice to work in collaboration with either another licensed physical therapist or under physician's care. That's one area of consensus. Licensed practitioners in any number of professional fields also have a similar type requirement. We also discussed our significant opposition to the removal of a statutory requirement that PTs coordinate with patient care provider, with health, patient's health care provider, if the treatment is modified from the original referral. Although the amendment does address this specifically to the postoperative care, we don't believe that goes far enough. Coordination of care with physicians is critical. It's absolutely critical. Specifically in the area of surgery, as an orthopedic surgeon, one very brief example. In training, we're taught as surgeons that we start the moment you start talking to the patient about surgery till the moment they're discharged. It's not the time that they just spend in surgery. In surgery, for example, we have specific things that may vary from patient to patient. One specific example, a patient of mine who had a rotator cuff surgery, without getting too technical, it was a little bit different than other rotator cuff surgeries. They had a particular tendon repaired called the subscapularis, which is different than the typical one. This patient had specific restrictions on range of motion. Unfortunately, the physical therapist decided that this was like all other rotator cuff tears, and they were going to rehab this in the usual way. Ignored the specific restrictions, the patient re-tore this and suffered a reoperation for this. This is one specific example where, although the therapists are very knowledgeable and we respect their knowledge, they weren't there, they weren't a part of the surgery. The surgeon is ultimately responsible for their care, and we respectfully need that if there's any change in the post-operative plan, that we be notified and that we can have a discussion. All physicians are open to these discussions. This doesn't just apply to the post-surgical patients. Oftentimes in the workup of a diagnosis, we send the patient to the therapist with a specific regimen focusing on a specific diagnosis. When the patient comes back, if it's not working, we've been misinformed as to what treatment the patient has been undergoing, and we move on to the next diagnosis. This represents we want to encourage increased communication between the therapist and the physicians. I think that's what the current state is. Collaboration with physical therapists can also prevent and delay the need for surgery. We need this. We need to work with the physical therapist. For example, when we send a patient for rotator cuff rehabilitation, our primary goal is to avoid surgery. So it's not specifically surgery that we need to have control over the referral process. And I want to leave some time for my colleagues, and I would like to leave with one final thought, that currently Minnesota is already listed as an open access state by the American Physical Therapy Association because current laws allow a patient to go directly to a physical therapist for up to 30 days. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rundberg. You have five more. You use up five. You got 15 more. Mr. Madsen, I believe. And the other is Dr. Schmidt. Dr. Madsen and Dr. Schmidt, introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I am Paul Madsen, an orthopedic surgeon. I've been in practice in Mankato for 19 years. I am the past president of the Minnesota Medical Association and the Minnesota Orthopedic Society. And I'm testifying today on behalf of our colleagues and members of the Minnesota Medical Association. Now, in 2004, Congress asked the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, this is a commission that is authorized by Congress, it's nonpartisan, to review open access to physical therapy for Medicare beneficiaries. The Medicare Payment Advisory Commission concluded that physician referral was necessary to ensure appropriate physical therapy service for Medicare beneficiaries. And their report said, and I quote, "Beneficiaries often have multiple medical conditions, and only physicians can consider their broad medical care needs." This is the direction of healthcare in the 21st century. As former president of the Medical Association, I find it ironic that the Healthy Minnesota Coalition proposal, which was introduced last week by Representative Tom Huntley, and which received much favorable media coverage over the weekend, suggests investing in a medical home model. Yet we are here today addressing a group of healthcare providers who wish to separate themselves from the coordinated healthcare providers and the coordinated healthcare team. Now, increasingly, physicians are working hard to provide continuity of care via a team approach to care, electronic medical records, and many other tools. Even health plans have invested heavily in coordination of care, all to promote communication and coordination between all healthcare providers. This bill takes a step backwards in our opinion. I respectfully request that you do not remove mechanisms that ensure patient safety and coordination between healthcare providers. Minnesota has an outstanding reputation for healthcare, and we must maintain that high quality for our citizens. The current system ensures that physicians and physical therapists work together to treat a patient's healthcare needs. Please oppose efforts to erode this coordination of care and remove important patient safety protections. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen. And Dr. Schmidt?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Andy Schmidt. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm an assistant professor of orthopedics at the University of Minnesota, and I work at Hennepin County Medical Center, where my practice primarily involves orthopedic trauma and total joint replacement. I also serve as the orthopedic representative to the Medical Services Review Board for the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I want to preface my comments by emphasizing that nothing that I'm about to say is intended to be in any way critical of physical therapists or the work that they do, and more than anyone else, I respect, as my patients respect, their expertise in allowing my patients who are recovering from injury or surgery to achieve the best outcomes. But I want to emphasize that as valuable as physical therapists are, in rehabilitating my patients. They do not have training in performing medical diagnoses. In medical school, one of the first things you learn is that you cannot initiate treatment until you know what the problem is. One cannot provide medically appropriate, efficient, or cost-effective care without first arriving at a diagnosis. Although physical therapists are certainly experienced in musculoskeletal care, they do not have the extensive background in all the sciences that collectively make up the practice of medicine. Allowing unlimited physical therapy without a doctor's assessment, this bill implicitly requires therapists to step beyond their training to make a diagnosis and then initiate their treatment. This is beyond what their training and licensure allows. The list of musculoskeletal conditions or of medical conditions that can masquerade as musculoskeletal problems can fill an entire textbook. Many people in this room probably know that the first signs of a heart attack can be pain in the left arm or shoulder. However, it is not so commonly known that certain types of lung cancer can present as shoulder pain. The parents of a young baseball player with shoulder pain may waste critical weeks having a child receive physical therapy until the fracture occurs and an x-ray is taken and it's discovered that the child's pain was not due to an overuse injury as suspected, but due to a bone cancer. The presence of the fracture complicates the care and may make limb salvage surgery no longer an option, so the child is forced to undergo amputation. In adults, aortic aneurysms can cause back pain and leukemia can present as generalized aches and fatigue. Hypoparathyroidism is an endocrine disorder that affects levels of calcium and can first cause muscle pain and later can cause a fatal cardiac arrhythmia. Even something as common as the drug Lipitor, which many people in this room may in fact take for their cholesterol, can itself be the cause of problems. It can cause muscle pain, and those can be a prelude to more serious complications. The treatment for this is not therapy for the muscle pain, but a change in medication. In order to avoid these sorts of scenarios and make medical care as efficient as possible, it's critical that a physician see and periodically evaluate patients who are receiving ongoing physical therapy. This is done to be sure the diagnosis is correct, to consider whether other treatment options, such as work restrictions, medication, or surgery, are warranted. As you've heard, current state law allows a physical therapist to see a patient for 30 days. This is very reasonable, since most benign conditions are self-limited and begin to improve during that time. Symptoms that persist beyond 30 days may be more serious, and current law protects the citizens of Minnesota by requiring assessment and treatment by a physician after that period of time. Thank you.
Dr. Schmidt, I believe we have Dr. Will.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Dr. Andrew Will.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm a medical doctor specializing in physical medicine and rehabilitation, and I practice in Edina. I'm also the incoming president of the Minnesota Physiatric Society, which is the state society of physical medicine and rehabilitation physicians. We work extensively with physical therapists in the hospitals and clinics. I'm here to make it known that our organization unanimously opposes this bill. At a time when rehab care is emphasizing a team approach, we see this bill as an attempt to remove the requirement to work as a team. It was interesting how the story we heard tonight from the supporters all emphasized the frequent need for consultation with a physician. I heard with the ankle or the calf strain about the internist consultation and eventually emergency room. And this bill would eliminate that requirement to consult with a physician. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Holt, Mr. Will. Court Holton? They still got 7 minutes, so. And Dr. Wolf? Please introduce yourself for the record, and you may continue.
Court Holton representing the MCA. Joel Wolf, chiropractor in the state and immediate past executive director of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners.
Mr. Holt,
the 7 minutes, I think you should listen to the doctor.
Thank you. Dr. Wolf.
I'm here with multiple hats tonight. I was the past executive director of the chiropractic board and dealt with the transitioning following the 30-day implementation, the 30-day notification rule. I think that it's important to note that we are here tonight not necessarily to look at the best of the best. And many of the proponents point out stories where physical therapists with proper training and experience did miraculous things, and I have the utmost respect for physical therapy and the people who practice it. However, the fact of the matter is their training does not include sufficient diagnosis to rule out conditions which the medical doctor speaking before me pointed out are massive and numerous. With the ability to directly access a physical therapist for up to 30 days, they can do a proper evaluation for physical therapy conditions, which I believe is the language used in the statute. Beyond the 30 days, if there's a hesitancy or a slowdown in progress or no progress at all, the current language protects the public from conditions going beyond a point where there is no return. It allows cancer patients and patients with other conditions to get expeditious care. I also want to point out that during some of the testimony, it was inferred that these physical therapy clients or patients need to be referred back at 30 days. The legislation only requires that if they are open access and there is no referral, at 30 days there needs to be conferring with somebody trained and licensed to diagnose in the state of Minnesota. There's looking through the materials from the physical therapist, we've gone back and forth on hours of training and this type of thing. But the fact of the matter is, there's no evidence that the diagnostics training in physical therapy meets the training currently required of healthcare providers who are licensed to diagnose. But furthermore, there's no clear regulation that shows that hours that they obtain for diagnostics or other procedures are being regulated or overseen by their board. There is a set standard that they need to meet before they can practice physical therapy. In the state of Minnesota, they have open access. Over the years, the 30-day protection has resulted in very few, if any, incidents where there are complaints or people have been harmed. I think the legislation as it's written works. I don't believe that it in any way limits the public's access to the physical therapist, and it certainly doesn't appear to limit the financial growth of physical therapy. It's a growing and extremely important practice. If the requirements and training change to include the diagnostics, then they can come to the legislature. If the regulation changes, then they can ask for changes. But I think the current statute works, it protects the public, and it has resulted in a wonderful track record of no significant injuries or problems with open access for the citizen for the state with some sort of stopgap.
Still got 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm going to switch more to the political and functional side of this. We've been debating this for years and have had many negotiation sessions and really haven't gotten anywhere. We have a couple of amendments that we have drafted and that we've orally mentioned them to the author. We've talked to other people who have not lobbied the committee yet, and that, and for the reason for that is that there's two sets of determination here. One involves the existing situation where you have a mandated collaboration between physical therapists and other designated providers that are often deemed to be primary care or portal of entry. The main thing is they have diagnostic authority and ability. And this bill would essentially eliminate that mandated collaboration. That's a public safety and a public policy issue that's larger than chiropractic. It involves many other things that different types of doctors do, some of which you've discussed here tonight. But if the legislature and this committee is going to go that route, then that leaves us with a more parochial problem, and that is that which we do, and that is manipulation and adjustment of joint articulation. That is not legal for physical therapists to do. You wouldn't know that reading the ads and hearing the arguments, but Minnesota Statute 146.23 clearly states that in order to perform manipulation or adjustment
you have to have three sets of training requirements. The hours are set for plus a diagnosis by a person licensed by a particular board of examiners to diagnose. 1 minute, okay. Let me just then sum up what our amendments would do. They'd draw a bright line between what statute already says physical therapists cannot do and what we do. And we put that in two places. And the reason for that is that doing an adjustment is not a safe thing to do if you're not properly trained. Thank you.
Mr. Holton, before you leave, that concludes the 20 minutes for each group. What amendment are you referring to? It wasn't introduced then, I take it?
Mr. Chairman, no, we haven't passed that amendment out or asked anybody to introduce it at this time. If more movement takes, we will be doing that, and we will be meeting with the author as well.
Thank you. Well, I guess this concludes the testifying. We'll go right into the question. Go ahead, Representative Thiessen.
In the way that we did the amendments, the last one we put on was a delete all. I just want to make sure, I think the intent was that all these pieces would go on, but I'm not sure that the record would necessarily reflect that, so it's up to you, Mr. Chair, but maybe we, maybe it makes sense to remove the A1, A4, and A2 just to make sure those get put back into the delete all, because I think with the A3 they got taken out again, if that makes sense. Or maybe staff can take care of it. I just don't. But just so the record is clear, that we actually want all four pieces of this in there.
I don't think the A3 is a
delete all. I delete section 2, which picks up a lot of those things.
All right. Well, let's move.
Maybe it makes sense to. Maybe you just do them all at one time. But I can't move them, though.
Okay. I'll move. What amendments are those?
A1, A2, and A4.
A1, A2, and A4. Why don't we move all?
A3 is already on. It deleted the changes that we made.
Representative Thiessen, we are moving these amendments onto the A3, right?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody in the committee understands that? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments adopted. Now let's get to the fun part. I want to remind everybody. I'm going to end at 8:30 because I need to be home to put my daughter to bed. So, but we'll start with the discussion. Go ahead, Representative Hamilton.
All right, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'll try to make it quick. I do have seven questions, but I'll try to make it quick. First of all, physical therapists, they provide a valuable service. There's no question about that, and I don't think anybody would dispute that. I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be. And so my line of questioning here, if I butcher the terminology or whatever, I do not mean any disrespect. As far as the A1 amendment, I have two questions on the amendments. The bill, as it was proposed, removed the statutory requirement that a physical therapist communicate back to a physician who has prescribed treatment if the physical therapist intends to change the course of treatment in which was ordered. Is that what the A1 amendment addresses?
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It addresses the requirement that you have to communicate if you're going to change the order. That's correct, but it does it for two circumstances. Well, under current law, if the physician just writes out evaluate and treat as the order, there's never been a rule that you got to consult back, because the physician is basically saying, physical therapist, it's up to you what to do. And that's like 80% of the cases. Okay, so that's maintaining current law. What the A1 amendment does is say, in a circumstance where there's been surgery, and the doctor addressed, I mean, that was kind of the heart of his testimony, that the surgeon is ultimately responsible. When you go in, you're kind of altering the tissue. And in that circumstance, you would also have to consult first, because the doctor may have seen things that are different when he was doing the surgery. So it addresses it to that extent. And that is another kind of big group beyond the 80% of referrals. Then there's a last group that wouldn't be covered, which would be non-postoperative, non-evaluate and treat circumstance. So the doctor sees someone that comes in with an
with an ache in their arm, and they don't do surgery, but they refer the person to a physical therapist. In that circumstances, in the disciplinary rules, which is what we're talking about, it wouldn't be a disciplinary violation where someone could lose their license or be otherwise punished anymore if they don't communicate back if they're going to change the course of treatment. That is not to say, and I think this is really the critically important point, that the professional who's a physical therapist is not going to actually consult with the doctor if they have questions about the order. But it wouldn't be a disciplinary violation in that circumstance. Does that get at it?
Representative Hamilton?
Yes, that answered my question. The second one, the bill, once again, as introduced, even proposed to allow physical therapists to treat under unlimited open access the first day that they complete their training. And just the comment, physicians have multiple year residencies before training patients independently. Is that what the A4 amendment addresses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes, I would note that physical therapists, when they're going to get their degree, actually the last several months, maybe even up to a year, and I have to get confirmation, a year, is actually like an internship where they're actually in the field practicing under supervision of someone else. So there is that component before they even reach the time that they get their license.
Okay, that brings...
And then to answer your question, the A4 actually says now that you either have, for the first year, you either have to be under doctor's orders or working in collaboration with a more experienced physical therapist. So it's putting back in language about that first year time period. It just gives two options. Instead of having to work under only a doctor's orders, you could also be working in collaboration with a more experienced PT.
Okay, Representative Hamilton, one more and then we'll go.
Give
other members a shot too.
Okay. All right. I'll sum it up. Can a physical therapist legally perform medical diagnosis, and can a medical doctor legally perform physical therapy responsibilities?
Mr. Chair, a physical therapist can't do a medical diagnosis. The reverse. Yes, they can do physical therapy. Thank you.
Thank you.
I suppose a physiatrist can.
Norton?
Chair Tao, Representative Tiesman, I don't know if you can answer this question. You seem to know a lot about the subject, so perhaps, but otherwise call someone up. The first question really is a spinoff of something Representative Hamilton just asked, and that is, can a physician who refers a client to a physical therapist also require that that client come back after a set amount of time as part of their prescription?
Representative Thiessen,
they can certainly say that in the order, and yes, the answer would be yes. Now, require, I guess, is the key word there, and I think under the language that we put in one of the amendments here, if they were going to, in a post-operative circumstance, that would be kind of an enforceable, at least disciplinarily enforceable. I don't know about outside of that, but my sense is that any professional who's a physical therapist and gets an order like that saying I'd like to see this patient or at least report back in to me, the PT would follow that recommendation.
Maybe follow up, would anything happen to the physical therapist if he or she choose not to follow that order?
In the post-operative, there would be a disciplinary in that after surgery. In a non-surgical, I don't think that there would under the current language of the bill.
Yeah.
Okay. We got some assistance.
Ms. Joan Bomer.
In the case of that, that complaint still could come to the Board of Physical Therapy because it would fall under the ethical conduct of unprofessional conduct, so they could still be reported. And there could be, and I know we have the director from the Board of PT here that could clarify that, but there still is a reporting mechanism and there still could be interaction with the individual, but they would not be at the high level of disciplinary of license revocation or suspension.
Okay, thank you. And I have one other question, but just a follow-up to that, and I don't want to hear a huge gasp in the room, but some of the calls I've had from physicians as well as my own background, I assumed and actually would prefer that all physical therapists see someone after a physician has diagnosed an illness. That's just my personal opinion. I do have concerns. I have the utmost respect for physical therapists, and I want to make note that of the calls I received, I didn't hear one negative statement about physical therapists in this state. In fact, what I heard from the physicians was, very positive statements, just a concern that there's no, that it's complete open access. And so I personally am supportive of the amendment, the 90 days, and hopefully we can talk about that sunset. The question I would have then is, can you tell me, either of you, how long is a typical, knowing that there's no, nobody is typical, but as best you can give, how long do physical therapists typically treat a patient? An average length of time.
Well, it really varies based on the patient and how they present with it. The patient that's a simple patient of coming in, you would be within the initial evaluation and examination and startup, you would do within the first 30 days, but the follow-up frequently goes beyond the 30 days because the standard protocol now is to really evaluate them, set them up in a home program, send them away, let them try it, and then come back again for a recheck. How are you doing? How do we refine the program? And then they go home again, and then they should be able to come back. In that kind of situation of being able to even do checkup follow-ups, our law would require them to still see the physician. And the comment was made, well, they don't need to see the physician. You can just do a phone call. That's true. But then if patient safety is the physician's concern, the phone call, in our understanding, wouldn't address patient safety. Because the phone call is coming from the therapist, the patient isn't even involved in that aspect of it.
So if I can just clarify, 30 days is an average?
For a simple patient, for a chronic or other patient, it could go over many months. For those that are traumatic course of injury, those can go over a course of years. And what physical therapy really purports is episodic care. So the patient would move in and out of episodes of care where you would set up and work on a specific issue that the patient would have. They would go back, and then they may come back again later on if it reoccurs. The other piece with a diagnosis, we frequently just get a diagnosis of low back pain, shoulder pain. And that isn't really an identification of any illness. It's an identification of the symptoms that you want to look at.
Thank you. Ms. Bowman, you were saying the simple, the basic, what's your average? What's the average between a simple case and a very complex case that you guys see?
It's really hard to put numbers on that.
50-50 or you don't know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I wouldn't know that. And it really depends on your area of practice, and it depends on how the patient presents. But, the 30 days is very arbitrary. The whole need for the physician referral is very arbitrary. And while we're in a culture where we're used to having that check, the research has not demonstrated that that is necessary. And in looking at healthcare reform and healthcare costs and patient choice, in the example that was even given, the physician can require the patient to come back. But the patient can choose if they want to or not. The patient still may choose not to go. And so the patient is always missed in our discussions. And it's really the patient's choice of where they want to go and how they want to do it. And all of the other providers that the patients have choice to see, there is no requirement for the referral, although it's common culture for teamwork and interaction. And I really want to stress that we are not moving out of the medical world. We are not moving away from our team and our networks with physicians. This is just to allow consumers to really access and utilize their healthcare dollars to a highly qualified, competent, safe professional. It's healthcare reform, and it's moving forward. And we just want to provide that options for our consumers.
Representative Abler, are you ready?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think there's been some good discussion here, and I've been working on this for a couple of years, and I didn't want to get to the point where we're talking about, technical phrases at the table, but here we are at the table. So I have a couple of questions, and I have a suggestion that the author will like, I hope. Where do I start here? I just wanted to clarify for people's sake why there was a 30-day referral. Maybe at the time it was arbitrary, but why those people were allowed to refer. We've not really talked much about that, and there was a good reason for it. And the people who are spelled out in your statute, medicine, osteopaths, chiropractic, podiatry, nurses, dentists, is that they're all examined and licensed, as part of their license in diagnostic training, in medical diagnosis, if you will. And in most cases, I don't know about APNs, but they're board certified in the case of the rest, with a national exam. And that's not nothing. That's a huge piece, and that's why they were the ones who were to screen. And as we've heard, it's worked out pretty well. Now, if the question is 30 days, 50 days, 90 days, that's a good question. But I think, as I thought about this, and in the last few weeks as I've been thinking more about it, the question really hinges about a different part of your law, which says that physical therapy includes evaluation other than medical diagnosis. When you move ahead, that's the part you got to work on. The rest becomes a moot. And I was, you know, you had, it was a handout from the from St. Swastika thing. I looked at the U of M one and the Mayo Clinic, and there's nothing there that's called diagnosis. The special topics at the Mayo was called medical screening. Special topic, you know? But that's different than differential diagnosis and ruling out all these things. And I hate this position I'm sitting in. I'm not your opponent. I'm not your unfriend. I collaborate with your colleagues. I've worked in this for 2 years. And sometimes, one of the witnesses mentioned, you don't legislate for the top of the profession. You legislate for the bottom of the profession. And when the middle of the profession moves along to a point when the body, almost everybody about 10% moves along, then we change the law. I've done more licensure work than anybody in the legislature since Sheila left. I'm the most experienced licensure person. When the ophthalmologist and the optometrist came, we did the same thing at the table, and it was awful. And again, who's my favorite optometrist, my favorite ophthalmologist, and actually came up with we brokered a pretty good agreement where both sides said, I think we can live with this. I'm going to offer a suggestion that I think pushes both sides. I've not, and I have no authority to offer an offer, but this is what I think as I listen to the surmisals. What I think the bill might be to get done with this, to move the ball a long ways. But remember, it's a duty of even the people in the audience who probably are the top third of your profession. The bottom third never goes to anything, right? The bottom 5%, you wish they had left the profession. But yet, you have to have rules in place to protect all the public from them. And that's why the good doctors who are here, if they were working with any one of you, the opponents to the bill, not opponents of you, they're opponents of letting the bottom 5% have liberty to do whatever they want without oversight, without any even board intervention. That's the issue. And so, Mr. Chair and Representative Peason, I think, in the interest of getting an agreement that I think helps your people a lot, and I think gets them a great deal of freedom, there's four parts that I suggest. I think there's some controversy about the post-operative terminology in MMA1. I think if you could fix that a little bit. And I think the point of it there is if a doctor or some professional who's referring somebody for 30 days or 1 minute or 2 years of care recommends that, they have the right to get at least a response back. And there's nothing in the bill that talks about that. And I think that might, you don't need to do my 4 points, you can go point by point if you want. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering whether chiropractors have to do the same thing. But go ahead, you can continue.
Well, actually, the reason that the term that came up is portal of entry. And I'm board examined at a national level about differential diagnosis.
So why don't you make the rest of your point? That was probably a cheap shot.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to be cheap. I'm just trying to be to the resolution here. And maybe we can get done. And then there won't be any more phone calls. You know. So if you can find, and maybe the discussion can happen. I think that there's 4 points to work on here that I think get you to where you want to go. There's something about that which I think you need to doctor up. Need some therapy. I think the sunset's an issue. I think that...
You could offer an amendment on that.
I'm proposing my package, and then I'm going to see...
One at a time, I recommend.
Well, Mr. Chair, the negotiations haven't worked in private. We're doing them in public.
That's right.
So, I mean, I'm sincere in this. And I think that the sunset... What the sunset does by taking all this away is that all by itself, if the bottom 5% continue to be bad, maybe they won't get cited or not, but they're going to be allowed to be free. And those people will be a risk to the public. Just the members of my profession I consider embarrassing. And we have rules about that in a board that goes that you met one of the past executive directors. And then we go after our bad people, you know, and I hope that they whack them bad because we don't want them out there. The board of orthopedists, everybody else wants no bad people out there. And so, what you have 90 days in your proposal, which is a great 3 times the amount of freedom that is there now. And frankly, on these referrals, the patient could call, and he could do a phone consultation. And if the doctor wanted to, they could actually a personal one. So there's a great deal of liberty, especially when they're almost done. You know, this almost done person wasting a referral to, hey, I'm almost done. Okay, good. The third thing is the report that we did in A2, which is really a non-report. If I was going to suggest how you'd fix up that report, what you have, and maybe you didn't realize, I don't know who wrote it, but there's a report to the legislature of disciplinary actions taken, and the result resulted in physical harm, only because of the statutory thing. If I was going to amend it, I would strike the word disciplinary actions and insert complaints.
Is that a...
No, I'm just, this is a, my suggestion. It's a package suggestion, okay. Mr. Chair. And then I would strike who resulted in physical harm to a patient, and then only. So what you'd have then is a report of people who complained. And the word only, the lawyer, that's a lawyer word. I just took that out because we're a lawyer, Mr. Representison. But I think that only is like, well, is it only because of that? But if the new law contributed to the complaint, I think you want to get enough data to see if people complain. It's only a year and a half that'll be effective. I think you could improve it so it's a real report. I think that would give some at least feedback, if you're going to have feedback. If you have the sense that goes, the report is less important. And the final thing, so I think you want to reinstate in your, when you amended something, oh, that when the A1 amendment took out that thing about that they shouldn't do what they know they shouldn't do, I think you want to keep that in. That thing, that wasn't a rule, it's deleted by your bill. And that's really no big compromise. I think it just keeps clear the obvious that if they did something they knew they shouldn't do, they should be in trouble for doing it. I think if you did those four, I would gamble that you're going to be. I think if you do something much less than those four, I think you don't have one. And I think we're going to get lots of phone calls tomorrow.
Thank you, Representative Abler. I disagree with your assessment because we've raised some of these things and we won't get agreement on those things. People will still continue to oppose this bill. And so we need to make decisions, which is what we're paid to do in part. So I appreciate the effort. I just don't think that we get agreement. I would also say that the movement in this bill has been on the physical therapist side a long way towards the doctors. So, to the extent that we've been looking for compromise, I think a lot of compromises have been made. Compromises that go contrary. I would not, if this is a bill that I was going to vote for, I wouldn't have done the amendments that we put on here. Because the evidence doesn't support the things that are being said. In other states where there's direct access without this re-referral back, there's not evidence of physical harm to patients. This idea about the doctors have to be there, you have to go to a doctor, really assumes that people that have injuries are going to doctors, are going to chiropractors. You're focusing on one little narrow thing about physical therapists having to get referred to doctors. We have thousands of people across this state who have pains and probably should go see a doctor. And that's a bigger problem than talking about right here. And I don't know why we just focus on the physical therapist, someone who's actually seeking treatment as opposed to all the other people out there. I think that it's picking on an issue that's much larger than this, and so I think on the evidence, I think on that issue, and on the medical home point of it, this is not to say that people aren't going to be part of medical home, and I would note that you have re-referrals out to many specialists who are doctors. There's not a requirement they report back. That would, if you want to really set up a medical home, according to the argument that was made, we should put requirements in law that every specialist has to report back to the medical home every 30 days, and all the chiropractors should have to report back to the medical home every 30 days. All these professionals to create this medical home. So, I appreciate the efforts to try to reach a compromise. After working on this for 2 months, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think we have come a long way, as the physical therapists have come a long way towards compromising things that are contrary to the evidence, things that wouldn't need to be compromised if we were just focusing on what the evidence is about physical harm and patient safety. And as you can see, I'm getting a little passionate, but it does upset me that arguments are made about patient safety that aren't supported by the evidence. And so, if amendments want to be made, that's fine. On the post-operative issue,
Again, I think I raised the issue. That is, as the doctor mentioned, I mean, that's a different circumstance, and that's why the physical therapist said we ought to have some consultation there. That's not to say that in these other circumstances there's not going to be the consultation and the re-referral. As far as the sunset goes, I think it works very well. I mean, again, the evidence from other states and the evidence in Minnesota, I mean, for that matter, shows that there aren't problems with physical therapists that result in patient harm. We're extending it out to 90 days. We're doing a study at the same time. And if there are problems, that can come back to the legislature. I think the burden should be on the side of the presumption should be on the side of the evidence that there's not problems and that we should not include a sunset. It should be on the side, the burden should be on the side of the people who, where the evidence does not support them right now, to prove, to bring back evidence to the legislature. And, I mean, to the point of having to deal with this over and over again, if we take the sunset out, you're guaranteed we're going to be seeing this over and over again. And then as far as complaints, I mean, complaints are complaints. You know, we have complaints as attorneys. You know, fortunately, I've never had one. But as complaints as attorneys, not all complaints are legitimate, as you well know as well. And so I would oppose the, I don't know if there's an amendment out here, but.
There isn't one. Ask the MMA if they just come up and see if this was on, would they be...
That was something that I was also interested in. I would like
to... I'm curious.
To see if the MMA or the Cairo have...
I think I'd better ask
some comments in regards to what was said here.
There was a designated MMA representative up there. I think they're having a huddle.
I guess not. Are there any?
Ms. Nazeski or somebody who would like to come up. Okay.
Dr. Well, right? Madsen, sorry.
I'm not familiar with public brokering deals, and I'm very uncomfortable. I'll put that up front. Nor do I feel empowered to speak on behalf of the 9,000 members of the MMA and their board, which is talking about this. So I think it would be ill-advised for me to speak categorically that we would or would not accept certain negotiated positions. That puts me in a very, very awkward position. I hope you respect that.
That's fair enough.
Mr. Chair and members of this committee, the sticking points that have been discussed are specifically the sunset and the advisability to, when there's been a specific referral with a specific diagnosis made by a medical professional, to report back, not just in the surgical period, but also in a period, as Dr. Rodenberg had discussed, in a period when, you know, you're working through a diagnostic tree. We don't always have a exact diagnosis from day one. So sometimes it is critical that we monitor response to treatment and then start to look at perhaps using much more expensive testing. And when we're talking about this here at cost containment, you don't always want to get an extremely expensive test to pin down diagnosis. We can't afford that. So I think that it's not just postoperative periods where we may have a very specific reason why we do or do not want certain therapy, and Dr. Rodenberg talked about that quite well, but also in a period where we're actively involved with a patient's diagnostic workup, I would say that. And I think it's a misconception to think that physicians have the specific diagnosis every time when we see a person one time. So that's the other concern we would have. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
That's
right. No, that's fine. I'd like to make an amendment, if I could. Just to...
Go ahead and Representative Abel.
Maybe I'll throw out the easy one. But some people, I'm not sure that you really meant to have it be... I don't know what would it be really on the A3 amendment. I guess it's lines 2.3 to 2.5. Those are stricken, I think, by the A1 amendment, if I page in line it correctly. Is that...
Well, what amendment was that? Rips the A?
Well, I think we're working on the A3 amendment amended. I think that's amended. So he said, I think lines 2.3 and 2.5 are amended out. If you deleted and they put that post-operative sentence in there, is that...
Yeah.
Correct? I'm getting a nod from... So, Mr. Chair, this could be the friendly one, at least Representative. I think that at least we want to say that you leave that in. That's a whole different topic than what you deleted. I think that'd be the... So I would move to reinstate lines 2.3 to 2.5 on the A3 amendment.
2.3, 2.5.
That's simply, actually, that's current law. It's in the rule right now. It's part of the deletions. That's the reason it's in rule.
Which rule is it?
It's written. It's rule. It's in rule 5601.200. That's a short version of it, but that's the rule. Do you want a copy of it? I mean, this is deleted by your bill, so I don't think it's...
Hold on, Representative Eagler. We're just having some difficulties. Could I get... you're talking about the A3, right?
In the A3, yeah. And when we added all those amendments back on?
Yeah, line 2.3.
Line A1 deleted lines 2.3 to 2.5, even though they're written different in the amendment, but that's how it would page under there. So you can ask Ms. Claver if you want.
Can we get research to comment on that?
That's the easy one.
When you incorporated A1 into A3, A1 deleted that. Does that make sense?
The A1 should actually probably read page 2, delete lines 2, delete lines 3 to 5, right?
Okay.
Right.
I represent Abra offers an oral amendment.
And I think this should be not controversial, just as you should refer back.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Thiessen.
What I would suggest instead is that we delete the repealer of 5601.2000, and so continue that on. You do make a good point about.
Yeah, and I can read the rule if you want. Maybe it's the same. I just didn't think you. I can. The rule says if a patient's medical condition is determined by their physical therapist to be beyond the scope of practice of that physical therapist, the physical therapist must refer the patient to a licensed healthcare professional. A physical therapist shall modify or terminate treatment of a patient that is not beneficial to that patient or is not tolerated by the patient, and shall notify the patient's healthcare provider of the modification or termination of treatment.
Okay, why don't you, sounds like there's agreement,
Mr. Chair, there's not agreement on the amendment that's being offered. What I would suggest is that a very good point is raised that rule should be it should be deleted from the repealer, 5601-2000, so that remains in rule. I would oppose putting that language into the statute.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
It would just be maintaining current law.
Did I read that? I think, actually, you might just want to reconsider. If you read the, since we're modernizing the 90-day thing, and if it goes forward as you would hope, there'll be no re-referral requirement. The rule references notifying a healthcare provider. They may not even know who it was. I think that the new language is kind of clear. I think it's clean, and it just says do what you know how to do and don't do what you don't do. This is the friendly amendment part. So I think that, members, I think we could keep that in and make the bill better. And that just keeps it an ethical complaint to know to not refer when you ought to. But that's the whole point of it. That's your testimony.
All right, I think
I'll admit I'll agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we need to vote on it. Well, I mean, the difference, just so members understand it, I mean, the difference is that if it's in statute, there's higher penalties, right, that you could be revoked. Maybe I won't agree to it. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking through this as we go because this is new stuff. So I would prefer to put the rule back in.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I believe the statutory language is actually stronger. It can't be repealed. A rule can be repealed.
Why don't we do this?
So I'm going to keep with my original motion, and if we don't do that one, then we'll do that.
The original motion
was to reinstate lines 2.3 to 2.5, which I think, if you're going to go forward with independent practice, which may or may not be the will of the body, I think this should stay in as a clear and obvious protection.
We had enough debate on that. The staff... Okay. All those in favor of Abra's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Amendment adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Abra.
I have a second amendment. And I think that on the Board of Therapy report, if the bill goes forward as you expect, and it may, I think that just having done all this work, I understand disciplinary actions require a complaint, an attorney general visitation, a process, and a finding. And this is not a witch hunt, but we want to know, they wouldn't say that Mary Smith did something and Tom did something, but they would say, is there going to be an uptick in complaints or not? That's what we want to know. We don't, and they would say, you know, there's no complaints. If there's no complaints, It hurts the opponents. But if there's no finding of disciplinary actions, that's kind of a non... It's a high bar to hit. And so I think if you're going to have a report, and you're going to have the sunset going off, hinge upon the report. I think that I would move on line 1.5 to strike disciplinary actions.
Hold on, Representative Eagle. Which, because we, this bill has been amended.
Okay. Oh, this is Amendment A2. Sorry.
Okay.
On 1.5, strike disciplinary actions and insert complaints. And Mr. Chair, a complaint is a bona fide reported thing. It's not just like someone calls up and does a drive-by yelling at. Someone calls up and they write a little deal down and they cite somebody's name and they give them an event and a date and a place and an action. So it's a complaint is a term which is understood not to be. Anyway, so Mr. Chair, there's a list of things. And so in the place of strike disciplinary actions, insert complaints. There's a couple.
Okay.
And then after the therapist, strike the rest of the line.
And then you read what you want us to strike.
I will. Whose conduct resulted in? And then and on line 1.6, strike physical harm to a patient. And I think a technical thing would be equivocal on the word only, but I think only just makes it unclear. I think was allowed really is a...
So you want to strike only as well?
Yes, I do. And that's my amendment.
And to the amendment, Representative Murphy and then Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have a lot of concern about this language. As a licensed professional and one who is... familiar with the work of my licensing board. Members of the public, patients, family members make complaints routinely to the Board of Nursing. And it is their job to investigate those, and that is a part of the due process of the provider. And if all we do is look at the complaints and there's not an ability to sort those complaints through the sieve of those that are responsible for protecting the public, I think that we'll be looking at things that are open for judgment, and then the legislature is going to be the ones trying to judge whether those complaints are valid or not, and I don't think we're prepared for that. So from my perspective, I think if we're going to be looking at this, we should be looking at those things that have been rendered as errors, that have been rendered subject for disciplinary action by our licensing board, because they have the authority and the responsibility to judge those complaints and make a decision about whether or not it meets that standard.
Mr. Chair?
Why don't we...
I just have a suggested amendment that might handle the question, concern of Representative Murphy. If I use the word substantial... Some complaints don't result in an action where there's... They might just have a... They might say, well, next time refer better, or next time... But that would be something. We want feedback. So maybe if the word substantiated would be put there, would that help, Representative Murphy?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I appreciate that. I do. But I think we have licensing boards in place to do this work, and I think we should not try and do that work for them. I think we should look at those things that have been rendered as actions that require disciplinary action. Those are the things we should consider in this report, and the things that don't fall into that bucket should not be for us. They should be for the licensing board.
To Hamilton.
Yes. My question is very similar. It's not as eloquent, but very similar. Would that be consistent, you know, as far as reporting complaints versus reporting disciplinary actions, whether you're a chiropractor or a physician or whatever?
Mr. Chair and members, you know, I'm motivated to make this work. Remember, our target audience isn't the top 5%, it's the bottom 5. And we want to know as a legislature, is there an uptake? And I'm just telling you, a non-responsive barometer is disciplinary actions. A very responsive, maybe too responsive barometer is complaints. I think I'll withdraw my amendment for now, Mr. Chair, just taking counsel from my members. I do have another amendment I'd like to offer.
Very good. Representative Abler, why don't we go with...
I'll defer to someone else.
And then we'll come to you. Representative Fritz, did you have some?
I think Representative Murphy asked my question. I'm concerned about the nursing board and the, I'm sorry, Representative Abler, the substantiated is a word that is used when a complaint has been substantiated. Then the board takes action. So I thank you for withdrawing your amendment.
Yeah. Okay, let's move along, Mr. Chair, on the A1 amendment. Well, I think I'm trying to get this so the phone calls don't come so bad tomorrow, because I'll just tell you, I've been here long enough. I think that a word that was alluded to as a positive, as an issue, is the word post-operative, and on Amendment A1, Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
I'd move to strike the word post-operative. And the reason that's important is that limits the different requests. If you have and this doesn't say you have to re-refer. Well, let's read the amendment as it's now here. This says that the therapist fails to communicate with the professional. If they sent you for hydrotherapy and you decide to do some kind of another kind of therapy, and you were sent there for this deal, it's simply to send a note back, say, I think we should do some other kind of therapy. I think you need to have some resistive therapy instead. And so I think that would be a courtesy. As a provider, I'm not going to refer back to that person if they don't send me that little note, just so you know. But I think that this, I think, is a big issue for the people who have trouble with the bill. I think it doesn't mean any harm to the therapist. I think it offers that they would simply provide communication as we would expect that they would. And I think it's stating the obvious. We have to take out that word, so that's my motion.
Representative Averd proposed striking out post-operative. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple comments, and I would oppose this amendment, but a couple of comments. Again, the practice that we've heard of, and I think is true, is that if a professional is going to make a referral with some instructions, another professional is going to consult with that other professional before it's re-referred back. And I haven't heard any evidence that that's not the case. I haven't heard from anybody that said that that doesn't happen. So that's the first point. The second thing, this is a disciplinary statute, members. No other professional, medical provider professional, has a requirement like this in their disciplinary statute, and yet we expect them to do that. We have the same expectation for those professionals. So I don't think chiropractors have this kind of requirement. I don't think any other professionals have this type of requirement in place. So, A, practically, people will do it. Secondly, this is a disciplinary statute. I think this is going, in fact, I think bringing the post-operative back in is really a big step. And acknowledging that there is something unique about the post-operative circumstance because the doctor's actually seen the tissues. And the third thing is a concern. I mean, one of the things we're trying to do with this bill is to make sure that patient treatment can go on. What we hear about the 30-day rule is that a patient's getting treatment and then they have to go and get a consult from the doctor. And that interrupts the treatment. Again, a patient, for instance, comes with a referral from a doctor. He's there at the physical therapist's office, or she is there at the physical therapist's office, and the physical therapist looks and says, well, there's something wrong. That person would have to go home that day because the person would have to call the doctor. The doctor may not be available. Again, presumably that's going to happen anyway, and there's going to be that consultation. But I think because this is a disciplinary statute, and we don't require this of others, I think this post-operative is a unique circumstance, and I would oppose this amendment.
Mr. Chair? I think the disciplinary thing persuades me. I'm sincere in this. I'm trying to find the answer. I think I'll withdraw my amendment and have only one more.
Okay, why don't we go...
Some else has an amendment.
Yeah, one more, and then I'll come back to you. Okay, Representative Abel? Representative Norton.
Chair Tao, and committee members, I've been conflicted about this. I think I've listened carefully to many, many, many people over the last few weeks. And I think if we could remove the sunset, I can move forward with this. For me, the sunset, I understand your intent, but this is taking a step to open-end it completely. And I know it's just awful to come to the legislature and have to talk to us all, but if in 2 years, if there are no complaints, I would have absolutely no problem moving forward and saying, well, then take it off. But I have not, if we are going to make a change that is this big, and it is for this state, and granted, there are 11 states who may do something different than we do, I like the comfort of knowing that at least the information from the past 2 years, the coming 2 years, will be provided to us and we can make an informed choice. And I don't know if, because we're making this change, that perhaps people will be a little more observant. Perhaps, perhaps not. Perhaps in 2 years you'll come back and say, gosh, wish you guys had done this 2 years ago. And you've got my vote then. But at this point, I think this is a big enough change that I would like to hear in 2 years that it worked. So I would move that we remove lines 3, 7 through 11
A3.
On the A3 amendment, which is simply the sunset.
Representative Norton moved to delete the A3 line 3-6 through 3-11. Any discussions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I oppose the amendment. Again, the evidence from these other states shows that there's not problems with open access. I don't see why the presumption should be upon these physical therapists to have to come down here once again before this legislature and prove what their evidence supports today all over again. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense for us in our life either, but it doesn't make sense to me. If there are complaints, and the MMA is here and the chiropractors are here, they know the sunset is in place. They're going to come back here and bring this issue before us again and can make their case. But I think the burden should be where the evidence is not. And the evidence right now is not against the physical therapist. The evidence shows that there isn't direct physical harm as a result of these open access laws. So, and again, this is a big compromise that the physical therapists have made already. So I would oppose the amendment.
Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just knew when I was appointed to this committee that we would be doing this hard work. And I have a fair amount of experience with scope of practice and these battles.
Well, that's why I appointed you.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is to the amendment, but also maybe a little bit to the bill. You know, I've been to any willing provider where I felt like the nurses and the chiropractors and the podiatrists were part of the island of misfit toys. I've been through nurse midwives and lay midwives for multiple years. Advanced practice nurses and physicians over prescribing. And each of those is an example of providers trying to struggle over their scope and some expansion and some sharing. And in each of those cases, including those where I have been involved, the argument has been about patient safety. And in each of those cases, as we've moved the policy forward, the things that we heard that were scary, like we're hearing about today, haven't really borne fruit. And a lot of the debates have taken many years, right? So I've heard some from people in my district, but not a lot about this. But I have given it a lot of thought, and I have been through the educational preparation and the current scope of practice and the other scopes of practice, and I have really made peace with this. That's my view. And, so maybe I'm speaking to the bill. But I think that the sunset clause and removing that will really solidify the place for the physical therapist for the next decade or so, like we have seen with advanced practice nurses and physicians around prescribing. I know that we think in good faith now, in 2 years we'll come back and we'll look, but it'll be really hard to remove that because that will become the normative practice. So I think we have to look hard at the evidence, and I think we have to think about the consumer in this. And the one thing we're not talking very much about is the consumer. We hear about the medical home. We hear about the primary care provider. We hear about the surgeon, the chiropractor, et cetera. But we're not thinking about the consumer, who's really going to make the choice here. If a consumer can go and see a physical therapist and make that choice self-referral by themselves for 30 days, they're the ones making the choice. And the physician's not involved in that, and the chiro's not involved in that. So I think that if a consumer can make that choice, they should be able to make the choice for 90 days, or they should be able to make the choice unlimited, and they should be in charge of their care. And that is the reform that I think the physical therapists keep talking about, and that is what, for me, got me to the place to think that this is the right policy for Minnesota, because the evidence supports it, and because I think we have to recognize that the consumers are in charge of their own health care. So I am speaking against your amendment, Representative Norton, but also I think in favor of the bill. Thank you for listening so patiently.
And
Any other response?
Just a brief comment, too. I've struggled with this one for the last 4 weeks as well, and I also want to speak against the amendment just because I think also that the weight of the evidence that I've looked at overall in terms of other states and experience in this state is that, 2 years, that the presumption should be on the side of lifting it, allowing the sunset at this time.
Looks like everyone's ready to vote. All those in favor of the Norton Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
I believe the ayes have it. I didn't hear you. All right. The amendment is adopted. To the bill, any more amendments?
Mr. Chair, I have no more amendments. I want to encourage the audience, and I want to encourage, this is on tape, this will be heard by many people if they listen. This has been a matter going on for a couple of years. If the bill goes forward as it was, there's been a great gain for the access issues and for your group. Most of whom are the majority of which are therapists, and you may not be very happy with this bill.
Mr. Chair, I think I might want to think about laying this bill on the table. Are we going to be having another meeting?
One more, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative, you can continue.
Yeah. This is not so different than the optometrist and the ophthalmologist. We did it at the table. If you take a bill to the table, you don't know what you get because it's in the hands of the legislature. But I think that as compared to meeting in a room where you have an agreement and you do the best you can. And I'm trying to be respectful and trying to help you understand where you are. And if the bill can go forward...
I'd like to lay on the table.
Representative Thiessen, I will lay on the table for Representative Thiessen.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming. Meeting adjourned.